Hello, all you Wildcats, and welcome to River Heights Radio. I am your host, Carl Hauser.
And I'm Hope Busby.
And we're here to talk the hot goss about that girl detective, Nancy Drew. We begin our journey today with The Hidden Staircase, the second novel in the Nancy Drew saga.
We read the 1987 edition.
Which is interesting. That was the only one we were able to get our hands on. Last time we'd read the 50s edition, now we read the 80s edition, and these were all written in the 30s. So there have been adjustments. Let's talk about The Hidden Staircase. Wow, what a journey. A real pickup in the amount of action.
A real buffet compared to the meager eats in that first book.
Just the amount of stuff they ate.
Oh, so much food and so trendy.
So much food, so much action. It's like someone came to Carolyn Keene. Someone came to the consortium of people writing Nancy Drew and said, oh, that was a good first book, but boy, nothing happened. And they're like, we'll show you. It certainly was a buffet, a regular smorgasbord of adventure in this book. Not everyone can see what you're doing, but your mouth is just watering violently.
I'm like a cartoon wolf.
Except it's gross. We had one weird meal in the last one, so I gotta ask, Hope, meal of the book, what is it?
Okay, in my opinion, the meal of the book is sherbet glasses filled with orange and grapefruit slices.
Filled with orange and grapefruit slices.
A delicious dinner of spring lamb.
Spring lamb.
Rice and mushrooms. Fresh peas.
Ooh, fresh peas.
And chocolate angel cake with vanilla ice cream.
Am I crazy, or did they have fresh peas at least twice in this book?
Oh, so many peas. Fresh peas and canned peas. And split pea soup.
Right.
Very on trend. Probably. It's a cheap food, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We're talking the Great Depression.
Kind of the Great Depression. Kind of the 50s. It's hard to say. The one I was most curious about. Plain gelatin. What is that?
Plain gelatin, fruit gelatin. Plain gelatin would just be jello. Without any flavoring.
Flavor? Well,
they gave her a very bland meal.
Right, because she was sick.
She might have had a heart attack.
Sure. So. You don't want to get all hopped up on fruit flavor when you just had a heart attack. No lime for you.
And they said, this is exactly what you should have to eat.
Dr. Nancy.
Gelatin at the time would have been considered a trendy food. One that was fun to play around with. You do eventually see in the 50s where you have whole cookbooks.
Ham jellos.
Savory jellos. Dainty sandwiches. Very end. Very end.
Who did they have dainty sandwiches with?
Aunt Rosemary and Helen. Dainty sandwiches, which would have probably had sardines. At the time. Generally stuff that we wouldn't put on dainty sandwiches today because we consider them not dainty. And another trendy item was the chicken bouillon, which was also on that tray for Miss Flora because dry soup mixes in general were just coming out.
Do you have a source that you wrote down for this?
Yeah, I wrote down the sources that told me these were trendy items.
Okay. So this isn't just you. You researched it.
Well, yeah, I am also in the know
about
what
the 30s
here
trends.
In River Heights.
Right.
In the 1930s, we should be eating. According to MetNews.com, dry soup mixes were just coming in. The idea that you could have a quick mix, a quick food, not be like chained to the stove all day.
Nancy doesn't have time to make her own broth. She's out rescuing fathers and...
Well, taking care of Miss Flora is just like a sidetrack to like going and investigating. She goes to this diner and she has custard pie.
Which she only has because the book is like, she went to the diner.
Yeah.
And she called and she did all the detective work. But then she had 20 minutes to spare.
She read some detective stories.
Right.
That's on point.
When the characters themselves are waiting for the next thing to happen.
That's what I want to watch. Is the person in the waiting room.
The last book we read, The Secret of the Old Clock, the entire book was detours.
Yes.
It was just her going places, and everywhere she went somehow happened to have to do with what she was doing.
And yet, not a lot of Nancy doing anything but driving.
Yeah. Nancy in this cover is in a teal blue affair.
Quite dashing.
And she's just hugging the wall on these stone steps. What'd you think of the overall book?
Oh, man. It's a much more enjoyable read.
It wasn't as mind-numbing.
It's an actual case. There's stuff at stake. You go from the worst thing that happened is her being stuck in a closet for a few hours.
To her father being stuck in a closet for days.
Yeah, kept in a dungeon, drugged.
Drugged for days, barely kept alive.
quite a bit more complex. Very lawyer-esque still. This is about her dad's legal case.
I called her a kid sleuth last time, but this book makes it abundantly clear that she's a girl detective. I think they dropped that about 15 times.
It's quite the quick transition. She's now solved one case that was kind of not a case.
The plot in this one is a Scooby-Doo. That's what it is. Someone's putting on masks and haunting some old ladies so they'll sell their land. I love the fact that she doesn't want to go into the cellar in this rundown, this crack house or whatever. Like, it's clearly the house from It. And she's like, I don't want to go into the cellar because that's dangerous. Mm-hmm. And then they find a secret doorway on the second floor that leads to a staircase that goes all the way down to under the cellar, which is a feat of architectural, how you were able to hide a staircase that goes from the second floor, a stone staircase no less, all the way down to under the house. And no one's like, huh, it just seems like this hallway between two rooms is a lot longer than it needs to be. Boy, there's a lot of cold coming off this one part of the house, and I can't find any studs. I wonder if there's a stone staircase in the middle of my house. One led all the way up to the attic, and the other just to the second floor. I expected, like, the kind of staircase you see in the cellar. Lift up this panel, and there's a couple stairs going down. No, God no. This is a staircase from the attic to a tunnel.
It's not hidden stairs, it's a hidden staircase.
Yeah. Oh! But it's the hidden staircase.
Yeah.
And her first case, really.
They are exploring and trying to figure it out. Helen does fall through the floor.
I remember Nancy falling down the stairs.
And when they find the staircase, she falls down the stairs.
And I remember Nancy falling through the floors in the attic, saying, oh, I'm glad I didn't put my weight on that, in Aunt Flora's house.
Helen, when they're in the outbuildings, falls through.
Oh, yes, that's so right. And God, this whole place is falling apart.
The whole ceiling falls in on them.
The amount of secret architecture in this place. Mm. And they go through it. Half of this book is them looking at walls. The Scooby-Doo style ghost was making the chandelier swing by standing in one of their rooms above them and like wobbling back and forth. He's good at haunting. This guy, he knows his haunting. Knows how to move a couch just the right way. My favorite attempt at a scare by this ghost was the gorilla mask, which he did not wear, but held up to the window. Oh, there's a gorilla outside! And Nancy just goes outside, sees nothing, and goes, I bet it was a mask. I bet it was a mask held by someone. I bet he was over there, on the roof, dangling. This is how that happened.
Mm-hmm. It really could have just been the guy. She decided it was a gorilla.
We don't know it wasn't a gorilla that didn't insert itself back into the book again. Questionable narrators abound. Right up till the end, I thought Helen was involved in this thing.
Sweet Helen?
Oh, that girl gets in the way so much. Mm-mm. Every time Nancy's about to figure something out, Helen's off screaming about something. Or Helen is like, oh, let me just do this. And then the guy's gone. Helen is a certified nuisance.
Nancy and Helen have a really cute little friendship. They're clearly very close to each other. Helen goes on all the explorations with Nancy. She's a good sport about it.
Do you ship them?
Yeah, I kind of do. But, you know, Helen is engaged. They sleep in a bed together the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
I would put something there between them. Or one of them has a crush on the other, but it's unrequited. Nancy's just too busy solving cases. So Helen's just like, I guess I'll marry Jim. Helen looks up this chimney in this misguided attempt to find if the bad guy had gone up the chimney and gets soot all over her.
Looking for some sort of secret lever, she finds a non-secret lever that just opens the flue.
Yes. She's all dirty, so she has to go change clothes and take a bath, and it talks about how Nancy helped her with her bath and helped her with her shampoo.
It's adorable. I did enjoy the comic relief that was provided by Helen's faltering attempts to be Nancy.
She's also somebody to sit there and admire Nancy, and that's why I think it would work so well if she had a crush on Nancy, because she's like, oh, Nancy thinks of everything. Because Nancy remembered to burn the letter in the sink.
Nancy was specifically talking, not in code, but just like very carefully not saying out loud what was going on. And at the time she said, you never know, the ghost could have microphones all over the house. And I was delighted by that sentence. Well, let's talk in code, because he was listening from the other room, because there's a room, a secret room next to the kitchen.
Helen loves the police. She's sure the one going to Nancy all the time, many times, especially towards the end of the book. Are you sure we shouldn't get the police? I'd feel a lot better if the police were here. Why don't we just leave this up to the police?
This is why I thought she was behind it. Every time Nancy's close, she's like, maybe we should get out of here, Nance.
Where... I feel like what they're trying to do is contrast Nancy's bravery and get to it attitude with Helen's, like, Helen's cool and everything.
But she's chicken shit.
Yeah, like...
She doesn't need to prove anything. She just needs to find a bad guy and be near him, and he'll just say it. Nancy goes up to this cab driver. She says, have you seen my dad? And he goes, no. And apropos of nothing, not being asked, this old woman comes up to her, and she's like, excuse me, miss. I was listening to everything. And that cabbie's a liar. And then the cabbie's like, you got me. Not only did I pick up your dad, I also picked up some other guys who then drugged him and took him out of my car in a hood.
And when I said I would bring him to the doctor, they were like, nope. I will kill your kid.
Kill your family. Anyway, I hope he's okay.
And then she talks to him again at the end of the book.
I'm not even emotionally prepared for that. At the end of the book, they're like, he says he won't identify the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Nancy's like, let me take a crack at him. Excuse me, sir. You mind? Oh, no, I don't, miss. And I know it's more than that. I know she said, oh, you've got kids too. I'm somebody's kid. It's frustrating. Right, she had this, there's this dilapidated old sister mansion that she could go to and probably solve the whole thing. Probably her kidnapped dad is there. You know, Helen says, are we gonna break in? And Nancy says, oh gosh, no.
We wouldn't evade the law.
We wouldn't do that. We'll go talk to the realtor.
Well, magically gives them the key.
I'm sorry, because I continue to be boggled by this.
Uh-huh.
By the reason they stretch it out this way. Because they go to the realtor and the realtor says, no, it's been purchased by Gomer. So Gomer's bought this place, and so they can't go.
They can't go.
And then the next day,
the next morning,
the realtor shows up, key in hand, and he just says, meh, I changed my mind.
I heard you're a detective, so have the key.
Because I heard it's haunted. Can you solve a ghost for me? And he literally is like, can you solve this ghost? And why? Like, why even the extra part? I get why you take the step to say Nancy no longer breaks the rules, right? In the 30s, she's a real lady go about do things. But now that it's the 50s, women aren't still needed in the factories. We're settling down on this whole, like, strong woman thing. Let's have her follow the law. That's fine. Why does the realtor just show up and say, hey, I decided to let you look?
Because Nancy needs to be helped.
Right.
Give her what she needs. He's heard that she's quite the detective now.
Right, and it might be haunted, so I'd just love to have you take a look.
Yeah, in the Jennifer Shaw article, it says, 30 years earlier, Nancy had no qualms about evading the law to enter this particular house, even leading the police in with her. So not only does she not care about the law, the police definitely didn't either.
Well, when did they start?
Yeah.
But I still don't get this extra portion you put in with him saying, no, gotcha, yes. Other than, I guess they just want to lengthen cliffhangers and stuff. I don't know.
And I think they wanted to really drive it home how much Nancy really wanted to go there, but was really not going to break the law. Like, we have to go the other direction.
What weird, like, realtor lobby had control over this book? It was like, can you really teach children how important this is? It's really important.
Obviously, white. The idea of class changed significantly between the 1930s and the 1950s. In this 1987 version, I don't know if they changed it again from the 50s, but the biggest change was between the 1930s and 1950s. Because
you're saying she's not the help anymore.
Exactly. In the 1930s, she was described as an elderly maid of all work who had been with them for many years. And that was her description. In her 1959 book, we saw a very simple description of her. And in this book, we find out she had become like a second mother to Nancy. There was a deep affection between the two, and Nancy confided all her secrets to the understanding housekeeper.
Sure. I'm imagining, like, the maid from the Brady Bunch.
Yeah, like, she basically wants to be their maid and her mother. I also imagine that Hannah is actually involved with Carson Drew.
You think Drew's hitting that?
Yeah, I think that they're a thing. But for whatever reason, they don't think it's proper, or they don't want to publicize it, or who knows. But I think it's a thing.
Maybe it's not, you know, a romantic relationship. Maybe it's purely physical. Maybe Nancy's obsession with ghosts comes from sounds that she hears in her own home at night.
Carl. But yes, we find out that Nancy confides all her secrets and that Hannah has always given her good advice. We can't have motherless daughters running around. I found this really great article. It's published on SimmonsUniversity.com. Mm-hmm. It was written by Jennifer Shaw and it just came out May 2012. And it covers the first 7 books and the differences between the editions. Nancy would have originally had a gun in the 1930s. She did not have one in the 50s.
I feel like we'll give her a gun in the 1930s. Like, she's not going to use it anyway. Mm. But 50s, she could use it. Don't give her a gun. Ladies shouldn't have guns.
30s would have been like Great Depression era. Mm. The ways in which gender roles are reinforced in this book are interesting.
Okay, tell me about this.
The established gender norms in the book are upheld by what's considered acceptable or not, which is determined in large part by Nancy, but also in large part by how the characters are described and whether they're guilty, whether they're good guys or bad guys. Mm-hmm. So it's subtle. It's not like all young ladies should eat gelatin, but you probably should eat gelatin if Nancy Drew eats gelatin. That's the way it is. Nancy herself can defy gender norms. She can be pretty independent. She can drive places. She can vote. No. She can be assertive. She can solve cases, mm-hmm. which doesn't put her outside of gender norms. It just makes it slightly different. There's different molds you can go in as a woman. I would put Nancy in the queen mode. The reason she gets this special status is, of course, because of her wealth.
Oh, yeah.
Her family's rich.
She's a lawyer. Yeah.
She's young.
Not too young.
And she's motherless. Mm-hmm. And these things give her a little bit of freedom. And not only is she wealthy, but her dad hasn't approved of a position in society. He's a lawyer. And he's willing to indulge her detective habit. It's a big point that this isn't a job. That would be improper.
Well, sure.
She does this to help people. It's just because how she it's gets proper her thrills. For young ladies to help people. She's still confined quite a bit by her gender role, even if we see her doing some things that we might consider, oh, she has a lot of freedom.
Do you think Nancy ever utilizes her gender roles to her own devices?
I mean, constantly, right? Okay. Like, she shows up at the opera guy in the other book and yeah. just like, hey, give me an audition. I think it's implied that the reason the bad guys in this book are willing to confess to her is that she's got that, like, woman's touch and they don't want to lie to a woman and they are willing to open up to a woman.
Clearly, they're going to have Nancy get something out of being a woman. What's more interesting to me is the question of, does she ever, with self-awareness, use that sexism to her own? I don't think, as you talk about it, she really does.
We'll have to see in future books. Mm-hmm. I think it might come up.
Well, because on the one hand,
I haven't seen any examples yeah. of it so far.
I guess what I'm talking about is like the difference mm-hmm. between saying, oh, hey, Mr. Bad Guy, would you tell me your secrets? And mm-hmm. him being like, I like the cut of your sweater. I'll do it. And that's just her saying, like, boy, I sure am a good investigator. And I don't even think it occurred. Like, she's not like, you know, I wore a tight one for this. Mm-hmm. But then on the other hand, like, a more divisive way would be to be like, they'll never suspect a woman would have shot that police officer. I guess my question is, like, how divisive do you think the books are going to get using Nancy's gender roles? Or even with gender roles in general? My guess is they're going to get as divisive as plain gelatin. But we'll see.
What we see throughout the course of the Nancy Drew editions, and I think throughout the series, is America's own confusion.
Can we call it America's gender confusion?
Yeah, America's gender confusion.
Can we call the podcast America's gender confusion?
So as our ideas of what a woman should be have been basically trends, and those trends have constantly been changing, that's even why they do keep it vague and say attractive. Like,
you know what we mean.
Yeah, yeah, whatever right now is in, that's what Nancy is. She is whatever right now you would imagine as mm-hmm. attractive.
Okay, so Nancy's dad, his job is to be a lawyer for the railroad. And currently, he's trying to make sure they get this land for as cheap as they can.
Oh, yeah.
The whole thing is that they sold it for cheap, but mm-hmm. now the citizens want to hold out for more money. Those greedy, greedy citizens want more money for their land. Dia is this one signatory. He didn't have a notary, so he's the pin, right? Mm-hmm. And her dad's like, well, if I can find him, he'll fess up mm-hmm. because he's not not like a criminal. He's just hiding. Mm-hmm. So, like, first of all, what? That's a weird thing to assume. He could just say, that's not me. I didn't sign. There's no reason he couldn't. And then...
makes more sense than him going into hiding.
So much more sense. So in the process of trying to find this man who's in hiding, trying to find him specifically on the belief that if found, he'll say, Ollie Ollie Oxenfree, you got me. I signed it. In the pursuit of this, there is at least one attempted murder of him and his daughter, a kidnapping, a lot of trespassing, breaking and entering, an attack on an old woman.
Coercing an old woman to sign.
How in your head are you, if I can catch him, he'll say he signed. He's not, you know, the type to lie. He'll try to murder me, but he wouldn't lie about anything. That's the first thing that just boggles my mind. The second thing is the very idea. He says to his daughter, I'm going to Chicago.
Yeah, he's a lawyer, not a detective.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm a lawyer who heard he might be in Chicago.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what Chicago was like in 1930, but it's big now. Was it not big at the time? Could you climb to the top of the Chicago Hill and see everyone?
It was big and there were gangsters everywhere.
What was his possible plan? I guess Nancy gets her detective skills from her father, because his plan must have been like hers, which is to ask every person you see if they've seen this person and get yeses all around. Because that's how she found her father. Hey, cabbie, you see my dad? No. Hey, old lady, is he telling the truth? No. All right, then. I can't process how these people do their lives, that they're just like, I'm going to Chicago. He'll be there. He'll be there waiting for me. Anyway, his job confuses me. That's what it comes down to.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, Nathan Gomber, their main thing is, oh, he has bad manners. And that's a class thing, right? He can't be trustworthy. Maybe Willie Wharton talks really well. Do you ever think of that, Carl?
All right. So my question is, and I know Gomber is an immigrant American, is that right?
Yeah, so we're seeing classism here versus racism.
That's what I'm saying. Is there like an archetype for Gomber?
Which is, I think, why he can be the mastermind.
Oh God, that makes me sick. He's white, but he's not good white.
Yeah. Because he's not rich. He has bad manners. In fact, my favorite part is he has such bad manners that they think he should be put in jail just for his bad manners.
They mention that.
Yes.
And they were not joking so far as I can tell.
No, they're just like, he's horrible. He has bad manners.
The way they said it, you could almost see where they edited death penalty out of the 30s version.
Now, granted, bad manners at one point in this book is him just coming into their house.
Yeah, who would do that? Who would just enter a house without permission? Nancy.
While people are there.
Oh, right. Well, very, very rude. Very rude.
None of these guys are actually hardened criminals.
Right.
Gomber is the bad guy.
The only bad guy is Gomber.
And he's more the kind of mastermind, shifty.
Oh, truly Nancy's Moriarty.
Yes, in this book anyway.
Yeah.
I would be delighted to see Gomber come back over and over again.
Who's behind this secretive bungalow? It's Gomber, of course. Under every Scooby-Doo mask, it's Gomber. Gomber would rule today's world with Craigslist. Oh, if he had access to Craigslist technology, he would be a king.
Yes, it is. He uses a classified to find his vehicle.
He literally found everything.
Yeah, which is a clue.
Everything is sourced from the classifieds for Gomber.
No. So my favorite part of the Gomber-Nancy exchange is at one point, Gomber calls Nancy a very strange lady,
yep,
which I enjoy a lot. Somebody has to, for once, say that to her face.
Well, even then, I think he was saying she was a very strange lady when she didn't stay with her dad. Isn't that why?
Yeah, he shows up, and this is my other favorite part. He shows up wanting to buy this house.
Yeah.
And he's very surprised to find she did not listen to his advice. So he comes in, and he's like, young people today are so hard-hearted. And Nancy ignores Gomber's remarks. She's just like, okay, Gomber.
Okay, boomer.
That's my joke. Yes!
Yay! Yes! That's my joke. I wish everyone could see in Hope's notebook, literally outlined and bolded, the big square around it. Okay, Gomber. So pleased.
I was. So that was my original note, too. So we've talked about the ugly bad guys in the past.
They're all hideous.
Greenman is a person of questionable character. He's done a number of robberies.
Oh my god. My favorite part. I'm like, who are you talking about? Greenman. I don't remember any. The man with the crinkly ear.
That's what he's referred to, is the man with the crinkly ear. You know what that means. That's literally what they say. You know, a crinkly ear.
I don't.
I don't either.
I imagine like a piece of paper somewhere. someone crumpled and stapled to his head? Like, what is this?
And I don't know what the implications are of him having a crinkly ear. I guess it's the old, like, scar under the eye, rough and tumble life that he's lived. Of course, he ends up being a pretty good guy who was just kind of...
He's one of Garber's Craigslist.
And then Willie Wharton is an ugly, horrible-looking person. Unshaven, and his hair was kind of long.
I'm pretty sure Willie Wharton was just living in a tunnel for upwards of 3 weeks.
Yes.
Because someone told him that he could get some more money for doing so. With no knowledge of Gomber's plan. He wasn't like, oh, we're tricking the railroad. He didn't even know what was involved. Gomber was just like, hey, yeah, brah. Come live in this tunnel. Your job is haunting.
And
Willie Wharton was just like, this new deal is crazy, but they're giving us all jobs now.
In his original description to the police, Nancy has this moment where she's like, what are you even saying? I know like a dozen guys who look like this. To which she is told, but he had pudgy hands, as if he had never worked. And she's like, oh, well, then none of them fit that description. That's a good one, Captain. How do you know this is the guy? Oh, he has pudgy hands.
It was the one-armed man. It was the man with the pudgy hands and the crinkled ear. Okay, so Willie Wharton never worked a day in his life. Pudgy-handed man.
And he had an upper tooth missing.
What I find interesting about him is we get in his description that he is this disheveled, like, castaway-looking mother. But at one point, we discussed his masks. He's got the gorilla mask and a scary old man mask. And I guess what really got me was he has a scary old man mask, but, like, why not just give him that face? Are they tricking me somehow? I didn't know that that was or wasn't his face. Oh, how did he make his hair and facial hair long? With a mask. And that revealed it very little for me. So that was very strange to me. Just an extra mask run in there for flair. I also love the book starts with a Dobby situation. What is that? Harry Potter 3 or 4? The elf shows up and he's like, Harry Potter, don't go to school. It's dangerous. Bye. And Harry's like, I'm gonna still go to school because that's where the plot happens. Nancy starts the book with Gomber showing up and he's like, oh, Nancy, I don't know what you're up to in the next 2 weeks or so, but you should just be with your father because he's in danger. Excuse me, teenage girl. And he specifically wants her out of, like, play so she won't ruin whatever other stuff he's... Because he's the one threatening the father. He's the bad guy. Later, she's like, maybe Gomber was the one who kidnapped my dad. And I'm sitting there thinking, yeah, I feel like that's what he was threatening in the first place. Like, that's like saying, like, oh, I know those two guys said they wanted to take protection money because something might happen to the store, but I think they were the ones who set the fire. I think they might have done something to the store.
I think on the page 5, you were already like, oh, hope, we're gonna have to talk about this. They used the term gypped.
The first racial slur of the book, yeah.
Yes, yes. Well, I don't think they had any other slurs because they edited it out.
Our 50s clock book had a Chinese, certainly slurry. Yeah, it was the racial slur of the book.
Yeah. Because in the 80s, you know, back when we were born, still acceptable. So
can we always refer to the 80s as back when we were born?
Yeah.
Is this so everyone...
We're old, that old.
Yeah, that we've dated ourselves pretty well there.
What I was going to say is that's really, at the time, I was like, oh, that's as bad as it's going to get. But no. Because in addition to having an upper missing tooth and a crinkly ear, these bad guys are described as dark and kind of athletic looking. Not what I'd call handsome.
Oh God, you don't mean...
I'm pretty sure this refers to race.
God.
Now, once again, I haven't read the 1930s version. I'm no expert, but it's subtle, but it's there. Just like the servants' quarters are referred to later, because what happens? The secret room ends up being the thing that the original owner used to spy on his quote-unquote servants. And he discovers one of them, of course, is a traitor, or for the British instead of for the Americans. Helen smiled. With a listening post, the poor servants here didn't have a chance for a good chit-chat together. Their conversations were never a secret from their master.
Oh, damn!
Nancy and Aunt Rosemary smiled, too, and nodded.
I love the idea that it's like, what a shame. With this listening post, those slaves were always on the clock.
Yeah.
Like, yes, yes. That is a problem they have.
This was immediately what I thought about. I was like, if my boss listened to my conversation on my lunch break, it was bad enough when he would come eat in the same room as me.
I hope I do not imagine you as a type of person who wouldn't just say to their boss the things they had to say.
Well, yeah, that's true, but also I wouldn't necessarily only talk to my coworkers about things I wanted my boss to hear.
True enough. I'm really bowled over by the dark and kind of athletic.
Not what I would call handsome.
Tall, dark, and handsome. handsome is a thing. So, like, dark is a handsome thing. Athletic is a handsome thing. So, yeah, it's only the fact that they're like, oh, he was dark. You know, athletic. But not, like, handsome.
Because it starts out sounding good.
Yeah.
He
was tall, dark, athletic. But he sucked. Don't look at him.
Jennifer Shaw says, when given the chance to show characters in a positive light, instead they completely erased race when they updated these characters. So instead of removing stereotypes about characters who were not white, they instead erased race from the book, which is what you're seeing.
Instead of doing good things for characters of color.
Yeah, instead of removing these stereotypes and assigning good characteristics to these characters that that they had been giving.
Pretty negative stereotypes. It's not like they said, well, you know, we're going to take away the aspects of race. We're not going to say that the crinkly-eared man is a man of color. But also, everyone's white, or you don't get to know.
Yes.
Boy, the Nancy Drew books take the same route as American history books.
Well, and the same route as America. Because, like, if you go to a lot of these estates, they will call them servants' cottages today. That's why I immediately was like,
I get you, book.
Servants' cottages.
Well, I'm excited for the bungalow mystery, as is Nancy. I'll tell you what, this girl, she has gone from gossip to real danger junkie. As she is hugging her kidnapped father, who has been drugged out of his mind for days, she thinks to herself, boy, I'm excited for whatever next mystery comes, when, quite accidentally, she found herself involved in the bungalow mystery. I really enjoyed Nancy saying, from what I've read of corridors, there are often rooms off of them.
Did not catch that.
I think it was either corridors or tunnels. Let me look this up so we can have this correct. Because it was just, I couldn't even. I still don't know how this house is built with these stairs.
Oh, okay. Wants like a floor plan.
I really do. If they're off the side of the house, I guess. But if they're in the middle of the house, that house is bisected by a giant stone. It's fine. Okay. This is my favorite. So when Nancy's down in the tunnel with the police now, and everything's solved except where's her dad, she says, I have a hunch from reading about old passageways. She's read about old passageways. Mm-hmm. That there may be one or more rooms off this tunnel. Yeah. Halls so often lead to rooms. And like, they've been through this tunnel like twice now. Mm-hmm. Is your hunch from walking past what are described as several friggin' rooms? Good hunch, Nancy. Well, this has been Carl Hauser.
And Hope Busby.
We're here with River Heights Radio saying, as always, go Wildcats!
We might need to have a special episode about this video game sometime.
There's a host of video games. We can, put them on our Patreon.
Remember to support us at our Patreon.
You can email us at riverheightsradio@google.com or find our Patreon, River Heights Radio.
We'd really appreciate it.
Instagram at River Heights Radio, Twitter at River Heights FM, River Heights Radio on Facebook, and River Heights Radio on YouTube. And give us a review or 5 stars on Apple Podcast or Spotify or Stitcher or wherever you're listening. Yeah, if you listen this far, I mean, why not?
We actually put a lot of hours into these episodes, but we're having a lot of fun.
Oh, it's a blast.
So, it's all for you guys. Thank you for listening.
An extra special big thanks to Robert Busby for composing and recording this podcast's musical intro, and to the wonderful Hope Busby for editing this entire thing. You guys make it happen.